This is reminding me, this is Bryce's restaurant algorithm. This is sort of reminiscent of, is it the chicken nuggets algorithm?
What? Welcome to ADSP, the podcast, episode 78, recorded on April 19th, 2022. My name is Connor, and today with my co-host Bryce, we finish up part four of our four-part conversation with Ben Dean about C++ algorithms. Don't worry. We will have you back, Ben, because clearly
we bring Ben on.
And we actually end up talking about what the name of our podcast is, algorithms. Like we talk about data structures and algorithms for all of four podcasts, and there have been ones where
reduced the podcast. So I don't know what you're
talking
about.
That's true. I mean, we'll take 30 more seconds as a diversion. go to the website, and we have a very nice tagging system where you can go and look at all the different topics, and algorithms is one of them.
The one that jumped out at me is the life advice topic.
So we have 01, 23, 25, 36, 37.
Is that the largest by category?
51, 54, 55, 56, 72. Definitely not. C++, I think, is the largest. Yeah. So that's about 10 or 15 of our 75. So that's not that bad. That's about 20%. The largest. It's got to be C++. Yeah. And
how many are in life advice?
Life advice.
Just one. Episode 44, should you drop out of school?
Oh, come on. We've given a lot more life advice than that.
I mean, I'll be honest. I create these tags a lot of the times while I'm editing the individual podcast and then completely forget about
them. What is strategic decision making?
I think that was part three of the Chandler and Patricia podcast.
Yes.
What is K?
It's a language.
K was the
very
derivative language.
Lowercase.
Yeah, it's the derivative language of
of J. Yeah.
If there's anything in the tags that you don't know, there's three episodes.
It being lowercase is what threw me.
We are going to have to talk more about Wordle because there's an article in the ACCU magazine about Wordle that I haven't gotten to yet. But anyways.
I almost lost today's Wordle.
I actually got today's easily.
I got down to my sixth guess and I could think of two words and I knew there was more. And I ended up guessing correctly and I went and did my Wordle hindsight. There was four different words I could have guessed. I had a 25% chance. Wow. So I almost lost my streak of, I haven't lost yet. And I was going to retire today. I thought for sure I was going to miss it. You were going to say something about Wordle.
Wait, Connor. So once you break your streak, you're going to retire. You're going to rage quit.
I'm exhausted because I play four different Wordles. I play Wordle, Quirtle, another Quirtle, which is Quantum Wordle.
You actually play Quantum Wordle?
Do you play Wordle?
I've played Wordle once.
You want to join my Quantum Compiler team? Because if you can play Quantum Wordle, then you can join. Then you're qualified to be in my Quantum Compiler team.
Quantum Wordle is upsetting because it uses a different word list, and so a lot of times
that is not the only reason that Quantum Wordle is upsetting.
I'm not that big on Wordle, to be fair. Mostly because when it came out, I immediately thought about it and I thought, well, this is just solvable by a computer. So it's not that interesting. However, I've recently been made aware of my Wordle strategy now is the ultimate sort of play it safe. Like, I don't want to get it into, I just type in, thanks to my son, he told me this strategy where you go flame, brick, shunt, podgy. They are four five-letter words that have no letters in common, and they cover, like, once you've typed in those four, you've covered most letters, and then you should be able to get it in two goes.
What was, hang on, because I like to write down different people's strategies. So tell me.
Well,
this is
my son Henry's strategy.
Brick.
Flame, brick, shunt, and podgy.
Shunt and podgy.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good coverage. All right. Let's Connor, I want to see the.
All right. We've held this off. Potentially, It's been a week for the listener.
It feels like it's been a week for me.
Well, zooming out too much. We've got the custom code written by yours truly.
We're going to have to make a few modifications because I hard-coded it in there. But I guess, actually, it's really just you're going to have to rename, change that to V and then change 10,000 to N. And boom, you're done. That's so easy. Oh, you're going to have to add random as an include.
You want to be parens there, not braces, right? Because you're making a vector of one element, which is N, I think.
Oh, God. Burns me again.
Initializer list, everyone's favorite thing about C++.
I hate it so much. I hate it so much. What's the header for this? Random. That's the name of the header, random. Yeah.
All right. We are running the benchmark. Will it compile first? We'll find out in about 5 seconds. How good is Bryce's C++?
Oh, my C++ is amazing.
But
it's because you don't have C++20 enabled.
No, we don't. We can't use CTAD if we don't. Oh no, we do actually. What's the error here?
Oh, because we didn't. It doesn't know how to CTAD because we didn't give it an element.
Right. Yet. Right. We switched from initializer list to a constructor specifying the number of elements, so there's no actual data to. Oh, C++. That's why we get paid.
Job security.
Through code obscurity. It's my favorite quote from the Scott Myers books. Is he at one point he says, job security through code obscurity. This is probably going to take another 30 seconds. Do you want to just mention that, or you want to mention? Go ahead.
I was going to mention some more algorithms.
Ben, are you talking at C++ now?
Not this year. I decided to take a break and not submit. I was going to mention more favorite algorithms for future episodes, if you like.
Sure.
I'm pretty interested in calendrical algorithms. Like I was saying to you, the algorithm for finding the date of Easter. Is an algorithm that drove much mathematical progress in the Western world some hundreds of years ago.
It's interesting the things that cause technology or mathematics, like, you know, the fact that that gaming is like driven a lot of technological advances.
Yeah.
And that you mentioned that to me the other day, Ben, about the Easter, and I had no idea.
It's a difficult thing, it turns out, and it took up mathematicians' time in whenever the 16th century or 17th century.
Interesting. Is there a specific name of an algorithm that is used for that, or is it just a general category?
I think the usually like the most understandable algorithm is attributed to Gauss.
Interesting. And the results are back. Bryce completely vindicated about the data mattering because it has completely changed the order.
Yeah.
And now what we've said in the past is actually false. The two max element algorithms, basically, they're not identical because in the lower numbers, max element 2 definitely is slower. But then once you get to basically about 1,000 elements, they're the same.
All of this demonstrates is that we still have insufficient data. This is just from one sequence. The way to actually benchmark an order dependent problem like this, you need to run an ensemble where you vary the seed of the input. So like for me to, you know, find this data believable, one, I'd want to do multiple trials of, you know, each, you know, test, but also I would want to do like 100 trials, each with a different input sequence. By different input sequence, I mean changing the seed to the random number generator. And I would also want to test a few special sequences. Some of the special sequences would be like the sequence of the input is all the same element. They're all zero. And one would be like, you know,
reverse sorted or something.
Reverse sorted. Like, you know, the first two elements happen to be the, you know, the highest, the last two elements happen to be the highest. Yeah, so you'd want to try some battery of that, because I bet you if we changed the seat around a few more times, we would see more variance. Now, even just this input sequence that we're using is far better than the previous input sequence, because the previous input sequence was regular. It would be regular because of this modulo pattern. So the highest numbers would always be the, you know, the 50th or the 60th number or so would always be the one that would be the closest to 10,000. And so, yeah, I think to actually really get some real answers here, we would have to do a little bit more investigation and a little bit more work. Maybe Tyler would be willing to do that for us.
My question that I really want answered is, across these two different, in fact, across the two different sequences and all the different versions of these, although I guess we haven't made any changes to accumulate and transform reduce, so it's really just the two different sequences of data. Transform reduce has always been slower than accumulate, and I'm confused as to why that is based on what we talked about earlier, that even in the non-parallel version, it's still taking advantage of some stuff. Why is it slower than a fold left?
I do not think we have sufficient data to draw that conclusion. I think the only data that we have now is data that indicates that we do not have enough information to make any conclusions.
So what have we been talking about for like the last
how to keep
then?
Bryce awake.
Yes. But I mean, this is almost every time that I'm presented with performance data, this almost always is the case, that there's some red herring in the performance data. The first time you benchmark something, you almost always are going to benchmark it wrong, but you're starting off an exploration and you may not be measuring the thing that you wanted to measure. Mm-hmm. The process of arriving at performance truth is almost always an incremental process. And once you've been doing this for a while, you start to learn to be skeptical of data. And the only way that you get less skeptical of the data is you go and you try new things. Like assume anytime that you're presented with performance data, assume that it's wrong until you can build a really strong case that it's correct. Because it's so often that there is not a mistake, but just that you're measuring the wrong thing, or you're measuring some unexpected effect, or there's some other thing that's influencing your experiment. And you end up drawing the wrong conclusions because you just assumed that the numbers that you were seeing were actually the thing that, you know, the were truth. Whereas oftentimes, you know, those numbers might be the right numbers for what you were measuring, but you were measuring the wrong thing. So my general advice to anybody doing any sort of benchmarking work is be incredibly, incredibly skeptical until there is strong, overwhelming evidence otherwise.
So I guess the question is, Tyler may or may not, or someone may or may not else now go and do this as an exercise. Is there a library that you've used in the past that does all this, or is it just hand-rolled timing stuff and
I have these little frameworks that I've pulled around from place to place. But the framework that you use is less important than the technique. I mean, you could use any framework and get to the right result.
I mean, I'm not really necessarily that sure about QuickBench, though, because it seems like the charts that are generated, I've only seen two.
The charts here are not how I would generate charts.
How would you export to Excel and then just do it there?
Excel, or I would use some framework or some other tool. Like when I am producing, like, a large part of my job at NVIDIA is producing performance graphs. And like one of the fundamentals of producing good performance graphs, one, higher should always be better. And that means like your y-axis should not be wall time. It should be some, like, there are a few, there are very few exceptions to this. Almost always you want your y-axis to be some metric of throughput, because that makes higher be better. And I mean, the uncertainty thing, you know, is fairly important, because if I take a measurement and there's, you know, 50% uncertainty in that timing, or 100% uncertainty in that timing, that tells me that I'm probably like trying to measure something that is too small to really be measured with the timer that I'm using. And so I won't be able to, you know, get any useful information out of that. And so frequently people end up doing that unintentionally, where they measured something that's too small. So yeah, I mean, like, I've written frameworks for doing this in the past. You know, if I need to do something quick and dirty, I'll often just like throw it in Excel. You know, Google Bench is like pretty good. I have some moral objections to some of the things that it does, but it does a pretty good job. There's a bunch of good Python libraries for doing these sorts of plots. But like at the end of the day, like, when you're trying to answer a performance question, like, ideally your data should be simple enough that you don't need a graph. Like, you know, yeah, here in this case, there's the question of, you know, of input size, sure. But like it's going to vary somewhat, but like it's not going to be that interesting once you get like beyond like small. And so like you could just like send me this data in like, you know, a plain text table, and I'd be able to infer the results from it if the data was presented in the correct way, if you will. So yeah, I mean, I don't think it matters really what like graphing tool you're using. Like if you've collected the right data, if you've collected it in the right way, I think you'll get to the right result. But in this particular problem case, there's going to be an overabundance of data. A lot of benchmarking problems, you end up with an overabundance of data where you have, there's a ton of different things that you can benchmark, and different parameters. And then like it becomes unclear what things are actually useful. And one of the problems here is like our discussion over the past hour, we've just identified that there is another axis. And any problem that has, you know, two primary axes is gonna be very difficult for humans to wrap their head around. And by, what I mean by that is that the assumption was that the axes here were, you know, your independent variable was the input size, and also, you know, what the particular algorithm was. So input size and algorithm. And your dependent variable was time. The thing that we've just demonstrated is that there's another dependent variable, which is the input sequence itself. And there's actually a ton of different input sequences. There's a wide range of pseudo-random input sequences. That's fine, because that actually, all of the different pseudo-random sequences will boil down to one data point, because you'll just say, we're going to try 100 different pseudo-random sequences with the same seed, and then we're just going to average them. That'll be fine. But there's also like the special case sequences. Those ones are probably data points that are not super interesting. Those like tell us about corner cases, but we don't want to focus on those. But that still means that you've now got three dependent variables, one, just in terms of visualization, three dependent variables means that you need to slice, or you need some sort of 3D visualization. And it's very hard to like tell, you know, how you're going to get useful information out of that. But I mean, I think the way to do it would be to, to try to remove one of those dependent variables. And the way to do that would be to remove the order or the input sequence order dependent variable. And you do that by saying, well, okay, we're going to try, you know, 100 different input sequences for each problem size, and then we will just take the average time of all of them, and maybe like the, you know, uncertainty of that too, because that's, you know, a useful thing to have. And then you're back down to just the dependent variables of which algorithm and the input size. But you might get into weird... Well, one of the nice things, I guess, would be that if you pick a large enough set of these pseudo-random input sequences for each problem size, you're unlikely to run into too many weird artifacts. It probably needs to be like at least 100 or so to avoid running into a bunch of weird cases.
All right. Well, we will see what our listener does with all of that information. Maybe we're going to get a beautiful, you know, JavaScript rendered, you know, drop down three-dimensional viewing of all this stuff. And well, I feel like this is going to be, this is our new Lost Reduction series where we did like four episodes where we kept on revisiting, and now we're going to be doing this with this problem for like two more.
So all of times. All of Cobb is NVIDIA's parallel algorithm primitives library, and all of the benchmarks and tests for all of the non-sort algorithms take like an order of magnitude less time to run than for the sort algorithms, because not only do you have to like think about this in terms of benchmarking, but this problem is actually far more important for unit testing your, you know, sorting or rearranging class of algorithms. Like you need to test all of these weird corner cases of sorting. And you need to have like a good comprehensive test of these different like input sequences to make sure that like you're doing the correct thing, especially in parallel. And like when you think about it in parallel, you know, if you're doing this problem like in parallel, those corner cases can become a lot more important, because the corner cases may expose, you know, weird race conditions that you'd not thought of.
Testing is important, to sum up.
testing, yes, testing is important, is what I was saying.
Not just benchmarking.
Yes.
Well, I'm curious to see, I mean, admittedly, this,
oh my goodness,
this part, this is probably going to be a four-part. This is great.
This is good because I'm going on
this
vacation.
Is great.
I mean,
content, yeah. Though.
This is just that we could talk about algorithms and associated things for hours, if not days.
I mean, if I was younger me...
We haven't even talked about partition copy.
Yeah. If I was younger me listening to this, this would be great because I didn't have any of this... At some point, I started at zero in terms of my knowledge about algorithms. And
yeah, so did we all.
Even the observation that like std accumulators can be used to implement, like that was not something that was obvious to me for a very long time. I think probably the first time I really picked up on that is when I read the Beautiful Folds paper that's recommended from something Graham, Paul Graham, maybe. I might be getting that wrong. I'll link the paper, but it's, yeah, Beautiful Folds, and it just talks like
Graham Hutton.
Yeah, Graham. That sounds right. Was it Hutton or Sutton?
If it's Hutton. If it's who I'm thinking of.
What did I say? Graham Paul. I wonder who that is.
You said Paul Graham
or Paul Graham.
Paul Graham. He's a Lisp person. Graham Hutton is a Haskell.
All right. Like Bryce needs to go to sleep. But first, Ben, some important C++ now related questions.
Okay.
One, is Ava coming with you?
No, she is not. Not this year.
Okay.
Guinea pigs need babysitting.
Yeah, I understand.
Could have brought the big guinea pigs. That's a COVID. You don't want them to get COVID, though.
So, my girlfriend's coming to C++ now, and we're bringing her dog, which is going to be very complicated.
Okay.
What?
You don't want to know the amount of
I do not want to know.
That's involved here. But yeah, I was hoping that other people would be bringing their partners so that she would not be stuck alone with a group of
standard nerds.
Okay, next question. Which of the cuisines do you wish to join us for dinner for? The sushi night, the like one of the Italian nights? I think that that's, yeah, it's basically like either going to be like, you have the choice of like European or sushi. So pick between those two.
I got to say, sushi is one of those things that I periodically try because I think, hey, you know, I should really develop a taste for this, and I've never developed a taste for it. Having said that, you know, the sushi restaurant doesn't only, I think,
The bottom is closed this year, okay. Only the top. And the top is mostly just sushi, so.
Well, you know, I'm sure it's all good, but of those two, then I would probably go for the European.
Yeah, you probably want the Italian, yeah. So the way that Bryce dinners are going to work this year is that Bryce dinners are going to be a four-person affair. It'll be me, the girlfriend, and two invited guests. So you will be informed I'll let you know which night I have in mind for you.
Why is this the case? Why? What is four? Is this a COVID thing?
No, I've always, my rule of thumb has always been that, like, the optimal group size is like, six, because if you do five, they may try to force you to a four top table. And four top tables are like usually like not actually that that ideal. So usually it would be like I would take six people to dinner because then you'd be forced to get give you a bigger table. They can't force you at a four top table. And like if not six, then probably three is the optimal number because then you get a four top table and you have extra space.
So you're choosing the third optimal number?
Well, four is not really like the optimal number.
Yeah.
But if you're taking your partner to a tech event, and you're gonna go to like you want to bring some of the professional folks from the tech event to dinner, three is not really great because then it's very intimate.
Yeah.
For the tech person, it's like you know you're a third wheel. And you can't do more than four, because then your partner is totally and hopelessly outnumbered. And so really the only options are either four or you don't bring, other, you know, tech people. It's either four or two. Yeah. So I've decided to go with four, and four also gives you the option that if somebody else has brought their partner, then you can bring that person and their partner.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
This is reminding me.
That's the strategy.
This is Bryce's restaurant algorithm. This is sort of reminiscent of, is it the chicken nuggets algorithm?
What?
I hope
you're still recording,
yeah.
Ben.
Now I've got to remember. So, as you may be aware, at your favorite fast food restaurant, whatever that may be, there may be a few, you can buy chicken nugget meals in various sizes. Right, but they are fixed sizes, and so there's a problem out there of like what's the optimal way to order N chicken nuggets given the fixed sizes and the price of them. I think that's it. It's something similar to that.
Oh, something like the knapsack problem or something like that.
Yeah, except
that might be different.
People being people, they've turned it into. I think at one point there's one of these restaurants where you can order a custom number of chicken nuggets. Right. I think this is the problem, right? And so let's say I want 17 chicken nuggets because I've found out that that's my optimal number of chicken nuggets. How should I fulfill that order given the standard sizes of chicken nuggets that are on offer? I think that's also related to the problem.
This is a great way to wrap things up. When I was in Sunnyvale, there was a McDonald's on Matilda Avenue, for those of you local to the valley in Sunnyvale. And I don't know how this worked, but they had a 10-pack of nuggets for $4.99.
And I think they had mispriced a 20-pack for $5.
Right.
It was 1 cent more for an additional 10. And let me tell you, I thought that was a banger of a deal, and I may have had quite a few 20-piece McNuggets while down in the valley.
Nice. There is another, going back to the Bryce dinner algorithm seating, strong preference for even number of folks, even partners aside. Because if you got six, then you can sort of have three groups of two people talking with each other, or like larger groups talking. I think when you have odd numbers, it becomes more likely that somebody gets left out of a conversation, especially at like five and like seven. And like, obviously anything above eight and it's just chaos, just absolute chaos. Like, you're never going to be able to deal with, you know, paying the bill.
There's a window into Bryce as an individual that he has put this much rigor and thought into the optimal number.
I mean, the other nice thing about four, where one person has their partner there with them, is that it's only a three-way split of a bill, and almost every restaurant's going to let you do a three-way split of a bill. It's only once you get up to like a four-way split that they're going to start having problems. Yeah. I do put a lot of thought in, there may be a spreadsheet with, like, you know, who's going to be going to dinner with Bryce on which days at C++ now. Lunches are unplanned.
All right.
I gotta desperately go to sleep.
This has been awesome. This
has been great. Ben, we're gonna be having you back.
That'd be great.
Yeah, we'll talk about the we didn't get to the end of the heap, but we will have you back to get to the end of the heap.
I will still be reaching out to Connor with opinions. Like, yeah, it's great to talk to you too about algorithms in general, whether it be on the podcast or not.
Well, I think the podcast is a great format, because then everyone else gets to, I mean, maybe not all our listeners care as deeply, but
Connor's just saying that he wants a recorded record of all of his interactions with you.
Right.
That's all right. I seriously, though, I do need to sleep like very badly.
Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed and have a great day.